Hello, everyone. I am Jennifer Klug and your host. Welcome to this episode of CEO Thought Leadership. I have the pleasure of chatting with Wilbur Milhouse III, the visionary founder, chairman, and CEO of Milhouse Engineering and Construction. Milhouse is a civil and structural engineering company that has grown globally. Looking forward to chatting about that. And we're excited to dive into Wilbur's journey, learn about his award-winning company culture, and all of his success. Wilbur, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
I'm so excited to talk to you. It's nice to see you again. And I just want to share what I know about your company with the rest of the world and your amazing leadership. So you have that famous story. You started in your basement. I can't wait to hear more about this because you're global. Can you even envision going back to those days and say, hey, Wilbur, you're going to be global one day, hang in there? Is it true you delivered pizza to get the funding for the business?
I did, very much so. I started the company in 2001 when I was filling out all of the paperwork and getting off of the ground. I was actually physically had a desk in my basement. And our basement at that time wasn't finished or anything like that. It was kind of a little rustic or rough, but that's where my office was. And that's where I completed most of our paperwork and put all of that together and launched Milhouse. And I ended up delivering pizza probably in 2003, starting in March. The story behind that is I had won several different projects. And our first year of 2002 was pretty decent, not terrible, but pretty decent. I had started in December of 01. So 2002 came very quickly. So that first year was not too bad. I think I revenued somewhere like around $100,000. And I said, okay, we're on our way. And then 2003 came along and I would won several different projects, but they hadn't started. And I was waiting for them to start. And each and every month I would call about them starting. And December, January, February, I knew by the time March came around, I was finishing up some other work. If it didn't start, I was going to need to do something. So the backstory of why I was delivering pizza is because in the city of Chicago, the rules and laws state that if your professional license and certifications are connected with a company, you can't go and work for another company and use your license or be a PE or anything like that. Many different firms wanted to hire me, but no one wanted necessarily for my company to be a subconsultant to theirs for that particular work. So my choices were, hey, I can go and throw boxes at UPS, or I can deliver pizza at night. And I chose to deliver pizza because it was kind of off circuit. I can control my hours a little bit better. I get cash every night. And that was the genesis behind it. And plus, I used to deliver pizza while I was in college, when I was raising my family and going through school. So I kind of knew how to do it. I kind of knew how to sleep. So me from March until September of that summer, I delivered pizza in 2003.
I finally started
to get things going.
I love that part of your story because it shows the sweat equity and the skin in the game that us as founders or leaders have to do to start these businesses. And it doesn't happen overnight. But you are successful now. So give everyone a 30-second overview of the various projects that you've done or are doing in the various areas of expertise of Milhouse.
Sure. Well, Milhouse Engineering and Construction is comprised of several different units in the aviation space, water, wastewater space, the facility space, the transportation space, then gas, then power, environmental, program management, project management. Then we have a branch of us that does general contracting. Then we have a forestry business that's based down in Atlanta. And then we have a development business that's based here in Chicago, as well as an international business that we do work in Enugu, Nigeria, as well as Bermuda. So we're full service. So we do a little bit of everything: architect, civil, electrical, mechanical, full service, pretty much anything and everything you can imagine.
Anything that stands out, that a project that you're most proud of outside of your philanthropic? We're going to talk about that in detail, but as far as your engineering projects, what are you most proud of?
I get very proud about the work that we're doing at O'Hare Airport and many of our airports. Whenever I'm flying back to Chicago and I take off or land on runway 10 center, there's a sense of pride, because that was one of our genesis projects after I was delivering pizza that we had won, and then it started literally or figuratively taking us off, no pun intended. And we grew a lot from having that project and having that experience. So that one's near and dear to me because of those reasons. We have a shovel and a hard hat that hangs in our office that was signed by Mayor Daley inaugurating that project. So that one was very close to me. Right now, we're designing the global terminal, the new global terminal. So we're the lead engineers for that. We have four other architectural partners on that, one notable one in Studio Gang, and we really feel that this is going to be a marquee project for our operation. We're really excited about this one and the things that's going on with it. So that's one that's going on right now.
I'm going to feel differently myself when I fly into O'Hare, and a lot of us listening today will also think about you as they're landing on the runway. So that's very exciting. Now, I know you through the Best and Brightest Companies Work For. Your company has been one of the highest scoring companies in Chicago for many years. You've received many elite awards, which means that you're top 10% of those that we score. And, you know, that comes from the top. Culture comes from the top. It's a full-time job. Not only one in Chicago, but you've won at a national level. What experience do you want for a team member working at your company?
No, that's a great question. And it really starts from the root of why I created Know House. So when I created Know House, it was all in the genesis of I wanted to create something better than I've worked at before. And I had worked at several different firms in the industry, and along the way, I've been at various different businesses. They may have not been in my specific industry, but I wanted to create something that I felt that people can be proud to wear miles across their chest, that I wanted folks to really embrace the company and the company embrace them in what may be small ways or very big ways, but just that they really can take a sense of that this is not just any old company. It's part of being part of the family, part of being part of a team, part of having a place where you feel like all boats rise together and we all win together. And sometimes when we take our lumps, we all take our lumps together. And that's just the way it is. So that's the environment in which we create. And, you know, it's hard. And each and every new team member that we have, and we don't call our folks employees, we call them team members. Each new team member that we have, when there's onboarding and I'm able to make it to the onboarding session, which I try to do all the time when I'm in town, I tell them that, you know, I need each and every one of them to hold not only themselves, but everybody accountable to the things that I'm talking about. Because it takes each person to continue to have that environment, that working together, that camaraderieship, or I'm saying that word wrong, but that togetherness and making sure that we're successful together and we win together.
You make it sound easy, but I know the work that goes into that, and the data and scores validate that it's working for you. Now, you have had many successful community endeavors, and I'm sure that is part of why people want to work on your team as well. You know, this feeling of giving back and what whatnot. So you created Millhouse Charities. What's the purpose and what are your goals there?
So I always say being philanthropic is part of our DNA. And since forever, I've looked for opportunities to give back in various different ways. And after starting the company and becoming more successful, I would do it kind of haphazardly. And then I started to think about how to focus and to channel our dollars. And one of the things that's most important to me, or very important to me, is to inspire children that are in the math and sciences to continue to be in the math and sciences and do well and give them victories and applaud their accomplishments. So because I was that guy, I was that kid that was good in math that, you know, no one in my community was like, yay, you're good in math. It was like, okay, whatever. But I said, hey, I want to have a place where we kind of channel our dollars to support individuals or individuals that are in the grammar schools and the high schools, as well as in the colleges, to continue their tenure, hopefully into the math and science in the STEM world. So that's kind of how all of that came about. Yeah. And how we started to funnel most of our support that way. We do have other things that we do that are associated with various different things that our team members are very interested in, but the majority of it happens on the side.
Well, with young people, and so they don't listen to mom and dad necessarily, but when an outside person comes and tells them something or validates them, especially someone successful like you or your colleagues at your company, it does something for them. It validates them and it inspires them to keep going. Are there any young people that stand out to you from the program?
I mean, you have several. I mean, we have over the years have had several that have come through different programs or that we've been involved in, have worked here, have gone on and done some great things. I can't think of anyone's name right off the top of my head, but yeah. I am inspired by various different ones that, you know, really have that stick-to-itness. And Caleb actually is one in which he has progressed very well, and I believe he's going to be graduating soon, and he's been with us since his high school years. So seeing him mature as a young man and really become adapted to the work world and understanding how that is pretty exciting.
Somebody once told me it's not about making great things happen in great crowds. It's about making great things happen at an individual level that makes change. So congratulations for all you're doing with Millhouse Charities. There's another wonderful thing that you're doing that I'm sure your team members also rally around, as far as the energy project in Nigeria. How did that start? You know, give everyone an overview of that project and the impact that you're making and what you're most proud of there as well.
Sure. I went on a trade mission back in 2013 with about 5-6 other individuals from the Chicagoland area over to Nigeria. At the time, we were meeting with various different political officials as well as business men and women there. And I was really just floored by all of the potential opportunity in this country today that is numbering probably over 200 million people. But their resources were very woeful and in need of repair. So for a, you know, a city builder like us, you know, I saw everything that we could be doing: schools, libraries, police stations, railways, water systems, electrical systems, everything, anything that you can think of. I was just like, hey, we can do it all. But that's just not how business is done there. So after really understanding that it's not as mature as in America, who really has really built itself up over the last 120 years to be what we are today, that country is probably 100 years behind us in many different aspects, especially if you even think about the basic things like power. They only have 3,000 megawatts of power for 200 million people. America's somewhere in the neighborhood of, what, 350 million people. And the land mass that we have But the amount of power that we produce is far, far greater. They don't produce as much power as even what we use in the city of Chicago. So I saw a need and went out to try and figure out how to fix it and how to basically create a middle class. So my philosophy related to Nigeria is if I can create power, I can create a middle class because I can create industry and we can create jobs. Probably 60, 70% of the individuals are not employed there. So you have a heavy amount of poverty, unemployment, lack of opportunity because there's no manufacturing or very, very little that's going on there because there's really no power. Or any of the manufacturing that's happened is happening on unregulated diesel generators, which are polluting air pretty massively. So that's what we've been up to. We've gotten a power grid license. We've ran into some different hiccups related to producing that power because our first source of fuel was going to be coal. So we also have a coal asset there as well, which, you know, many individuals go, no, coal is dirty. But we look at opportunities to be able to create sustainability for people. And coal is one of those opportunities. Even in America, we still 30% of our power is still produced by coal today. And my philosophy is if we can still be using it in so many other countries, we shouldn't look down upon a country like a Nigeria that is an impoverished or third world to get off its feet and really be able to grow, but also looking at the future of how we can also produce new things. So we're also looking at other minerals there, like lithium, manganese, cobalt, other things like that, that produce batteries, and also looking to produce a battery plant there as well. So those are the things that we're doing there around power, around how we're trying to inspire that nation and hopefully inspire many other nations along it. Most of West Africa is very much similar to Nigeria, maybe not as populous, but definitely very similar.
Wow, what an amazing story and legacy. And this is why I wanted you on the program. You're one person, one company, and look at the huge impact. I wish I had an engineering degree so I could come work for you.
Well, you don't have to have an engineering degree. We have all kinds of different.
Oh, gosh. Well, as a fellow leader, we've all had our monumental moments. There's been some ups, there's some downs. We seem to remember the negative more than the positive. Sure. But what I think is important for others listening to this program is everybody has these monumental moments. And when you're in it, you think you're the only one. Can you share a monumental moment or two with those listening today? Things that you were worried about and it happened, or a huge achievement that you didn't even think you would be in contention for, and how you handled those moments?
Sure. It's funny enough, we are going through one of those moments right now. So what I've learned is, as we continue to build, and we're somewhere near 500 folks today, it seems like there's iterations of our growth. When we went from like 50 to 100 and got to be about 120, we had to change almost everything, our processes, everything, the way we operate, because most of those things, the way I built them at the beginning, started falling apart. And usually that leads into other financial issues that we're all over the place. And so the first one probably happened back around one of our times when it was very tough in the country in 2008, 9, 10, where we were growing still, but all of our systems were falling apart. And we had to do a lot of changing of the way we were doing things and really figuring out how to operate better and really studying other firms and being able to really see and have reflection on ourselves of, okay, now I understand why these things stop working and this is what we need to be doing. So we're going through that right now. Funny enough, I mean, it's not funny, it's miserable. Earlier this or last year, we found out that we actually had some individuals in our company doing nefarious things. Nefarious things that really caused us to lose somewhere in the neighborhood of about $4 million.
Oh my gosh.
And
sorry, Wilbur, I am so sorry.
And it was going on for a long amount of time. And so when we discovered it in May, and all of the changes that we made since then, and really unveiling all of it through July, and then rolling back a lot of what we thought were revenues and all kinds of stuff. But today, looking at it, we've really come through very strongly. Our team has really gelled together, and we really saw how important it is for us to always keep an eye on the ball in various different ways. Our project manager's manual, and this is one of the areas in which we really saw this is the critical place where things went wrong. Our project manager's manual went to a manual that was probably less than an inch thick to about an inch and a half. And it's really a testament to our folks and really realizing and seeing how important our project managers are, and really saying, okay, we need to be focusing here because this is where we win each and every day. And then we need to have very good controls and KPIs in place to make sure that those individuals are performing at the highest level. And so that's one in which we're going through today, or we're coming out of. You know, I look at things very positively in the sense that I'm glad this happened, and I tell many people this. If that didn't happen then, I would hate for it to happen as we're looking to double and triple again. Because if it happens at that level, it could have been catastrophic.
And that's how really successful leaders think. They look at the things that beat them up a little bit and say, I'm so glad that that happened because it made us stronger. And I want to thank you for your transparency there. There are so many companies that have issues that you described, and they hide it or they bury it. You didn't do that. You brought it to the forefront, and it made a cohesive bond with your team to address.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that success in that obstacle that you overcame. And, you know, past 4 years have been a little brutal. I don't know if you watch any of the Avengers movies, but when the Hulk takes Loki and whacks him around a few times, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
But, you know, what are your thoughts on the changes in the last 4 years? That, you know, the workforce has changed, attitudes have changed. What's working? What's not working? What are your thoughts and opinions there?
I'm mixed in how to respond, only because I think there are good things that came from the last 4 years, which of course COVID was heavily a marker in that, and us working from home and so forth. I think it allowed us to be at a place where a person doesn't have to be in the office, have to be. But I also think that many individuals have taken advantage of that flexibility to sometime extremes, which make it hard for those who actually perform well at home. And I don't subscribe to everyone needs to be in the office. We have a superstar developer individual for all of our artistic information that we use, that she works 100% remote, and she's fantastic. And she's, if I called her right now, she would pick up. Yeah. She's always on, and she's fantastic. But then there's some individuals that you're searching for, and you're like, what's going on? Why can't I find this person? Right. And I think there's a balance. I think it can be done with the right people, but we've seen a slowdown in productivity. We've seen a slowdown in our individuals being able to produce a quality product on their own. Excuse me. We've seen that the edification of the team member hasn't been as good because they don't have those other individuals nearby that they can go and tap on and talk to, or someone stopping by and just lending a helping hand. And even in my promotions over the last 4 years, it's heavily been around individuals that I see that are close to me, that are interacting personally. I can't say that the entire change has been good.
Yeah.
It's been very difficult, but I think it has its role.
Yeah.
To help. I was sick for 2 days last week. I was still working, but I didn't want to be around the office to get anybody else sick. Yeah. So I could just still tune in and keep things moving. I think it's perfect for that, but I don't think it should be the mainstay. And we got to find that perfect balance.
We're hearing a lot. We have other CEOs that we hear a lot from in our CEO roundtables, and they're saying similar things. And the theme that seems to be coming out is what you're describing. Collaboration is very difficult in a hybrid world, and training and mentoring is very difficult. And it actually puts more pressure on leaders and managers and supervisors to have more individual conversations in a digital environment. And it's just harder in many ways. Yeah. But there's so many perks there too. So people are trying to figure that formula out. You're not alone there. You're not alone. But let's talk about some of these young professionals coming into the workplace now. They're coming into a completely different world.
Yeah.
I know you mentor a lot of young people, and you mentioned that already, but what advice are you giving them right now?
It varies. Funny enough, I was out last night with a individual who, you know, he considers me to be his mentor. We didn't formally make anything, but he will say that to other people. I think he's very accomplished on his own. And he was talking about various different things, and he opened up and said, what am I not thinking about? What should I be thinking about? What advice can you just generally give me? And I said, really and truly, you've done very well. You're at a very high place. But the secret of business is not just getting there, it's staying there. How do you maintain? And how do you not just go up and then drop back down, but how do you build it in such a way where you can maintain it, not just get there? And so that's a heavy piece of advice in which I give most individuals. It's not about just getting to a plateau or getting to that summit for a second. It's about getting there and staying there and then figuring out how to elevate again.
It takes tenacity and endurance.
Yes.
It's several marathon runs instead of a sprint, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So looking forward to the rest of this year, you know, there's some weird things going on out there as far as corporations and the economy and what have you. What trends are you seeing that other executives listening to this can learn from within your industry? Are you seeing business getting more? Are you getting contracts? Are people stalling on contracts? Are there payment issues? What's going on right now?
Right now, I think it's holding steady. I mean, I'm looking at our utility space very closely. I've seen in a few locations where various rate cases were not approved related to those utilities having certain rates that they can charge their customers, which has reduced the amount of work in which that utility needs to do to keep the infrastructure solid. So those are concerning things that I've seen in two different regions. But most of the regions, especially in that space, I've seen be very solid. The transportation space seems to be very, very solid. The housing market is a bit shaky. We don't do a lot of work in the housing market, very, very little. Not a lot of work with developers in that space or others. In the Chicagoland area, there's not a lot of new development going on. Very concerned related to how the new administration is interacting with the new business community. And right now in Chicago, there's no cranes in the air. Third largest city in America, and there's no cranes in the air. So that's a little disturbing for me. So I have mixed reviews related to what I'm seeing. I look at various different indicators as far as how we evaluate certain things. And sometimes because we have such a heavy amount of public sector work, we're kind of shielded from what's totally going on in the economy, which we're lucky in that way, but we're not always shielded. So we're seeing a lot of vulnerability out there.
Understood. And it's a little weird for us that have been in business for years and years and seen a thing or two. It's just a little weird. Not bad, not good, just weird.
Yeah.
So let's shift gears here. I love to chat about you as a human. So many times people see a successful person or they're a leader with the title chairman and CEO, and they get a little nervous, right? They get a little nervous, or they hesitate, or I don't want to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. So let's talk about you as a human. Do you have time for fun? You know, what do you do for fun?
Fun for me is actually watching a football or basketball game or sporting event, generally, possibly having a cigar and a cocktail. That's very relaxing. That's very much fun, easy if it's during the week. I love going on vacations. I love attending those events in person as well. But just the small things. And then I really have a great time when I'm cooking for my family. So many times we'll have barbecues and we'll invite everybody over and we're cooking and the grandkids are around and the kids are around and friends and family, and we're laughing, we're playing cards sometimes, and we're having a good time. So that those are my moments in which I'm at ease, that I'm not necessarily thinking about work per se, even though a lot of my family is in the business as well. So we're always talking about various things about work, but we try not to have everything be work, but
tough to separate it, isn't it?
I think it's part of who we are. So it makes it easy to wrap it all together.
Did you say you're cooking when the family comes over?
Oh, absolutely. I'm pretty much a chef. So if we have something creative that we want to have, I'll probably give it a go. But I have a very good gravy when I'm making spaghetti. So I play Italian music. I kind of have mannerisms in for that couple of hours. And the whole family has to stir the pot. Whoever's in the house, they have to stir the gravy, because that's just part of your contribution to the family.
Yeah, that's fun. That is fun. You know, you might even want to do a side hustle there and can it and jar it and put a label on it and sell
Wilbur's
it for
gravy.
You.
Wilbur's gravy, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So you said you spend a lot of time with family members and you talk about work, but when you don't talk about work, what advice do you give them about having a fulfilling life?
It's sort of what I'm doing, is spend time. That's the one thing you can't get back. And that's the one thing that, you know, we have so limited hours. So, I mean, one of my secrets is I schedule things. And I know it sounds robotic, but I schedule things as to not miss them. So every other Sunday, I schedule time with my granddaughters.
Nice.
So this Sunday, I have time with my granddaughters, and it's on my calendar. So when I see my calendar, I go, it's Sophie and Skylar Sunday. So I'm going to make sure that I'm not traveling, that I'm around, and we're going to do something. And, you know, it's no telling what we'll end up doing.
I have a feeling you are the funnest grandparent ever. What do they call you? Are you
Papa.
Big Papa? That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Just one more question, just to get a feel for you as a human. What, do you have any hidden talents? Do you play an instrument or do anything fun or goofy?
No, I don't. I always tell people I'm probably good enough at a little bit of everything that if in life we had a decathlon like of every sport or playing different board games and cards and all that kind of stuff, or you name it, I probably would win. So I think I would win those different decathlons of I'm good at everything but not great at one thing. So
Very good, very good. Well, Wilbur, it has been fantastic having you on the program. Your leadership at Millhouse Engineering and Construction is unparalleled, and I'm so glad you came on the program. Thank you for being here and keep shining bright. Thank you so
oh,
much for joining
thank you.
us.
Thank you for having me again, Jennifer.
All right, have a great day, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Are you?